Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior Paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to episode 206 of the Tool Shed with Click and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Oh, man, not much, but this week it's Junior Caminero coming to town, as long as he stays in low A this week. I actually thought he was getting promoted last week. I'd heard that he was going to be in double A to begin last week. Obviously, didn't happen, but yeah, on Tuesday, it'll be happening. I'm looking forward to that series. That's a fun team in Boiling Green. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Did you say Boiling Green?
Bowling. I don't know why I said boiling.
That's what I thought you said.
It came out wrong.
That sounds badass. A Boiling Green.
That just came out.
They boiled their opponents. That is a pretty fun team though. Like, it sucks that no Tampa Bay farm team goes anywhere near me. Well. I guess AAA Durham could come up here to Worcester, Massachusetts, which is like 2.5 hour drive, but by the time they're in AAA, it's like whatever. But I got no Rays farm team anywhere close to here, unfortunately. But I will have some live looks at some fun pitching prospects this week. Somerset, Yankees AA is coming to town. And I think I had to line up the schedule. I think it's gonna be right in a row, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I forget the order of the three, but I think it's Richard Fitz on Wednesday versus, I think, Shane Drohan for the Sox or Sea Dogs. And then Will Warren on Thursday and Clayton Beater on Friday, I think. Nice. So that'd be a fun back-to-back-to-back, some fun pitching prospects there. And also Yankees have Jason Dominguez is there, Everson Pereira is there, Trey Sweeney's there.
Austin Wells,
my boy. Austin Wells is there, so this would be a fun and – Portland still has Sedan Rafaela, Nico Cavadas, Nick York. So it'd be a fun little series there. So that'll be fun to get It's always fun to get like the ballpark like, multiple days in a row. So line up this week very well. But we got a couple fun episodes in store. First couple episodes this week. We're recording. So if you listen to these, we're doing two separate mock draft episodes. I mean, there's been a lot of movement already first month and a half of the season in terms of pitching ranks, both on the prospect side and on the major league side. So we're doing a pitching prospect mock draft, see where all the names lie now after the first month of the season. And we'll do a dynasty one as well. So we're recording both these on Sunday. The pitching prospect one will be out, which is what you're listening to now, on Monday. The dynasty one will be out on Wednesday. So all the stats in the dynasty one, which I'll put a caveat in that episode as well, will be a little bit, a couple of days old. So obviously recording on Sunday, but figured we do two separate episodes. Kind of fun. A lot of shifting. So we'll get as many picks as we can in the episode with some analysis along the way. But before we get into the episode, let's get the usual housekeeping out of the way here. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at AirCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Check out my Patreon and Chris's Substack for more work from each of us, including all of our prospect and dynasty rankings. And before we get into the show, we want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you set up using the promo code Toolshed, you will receive a 100% deposit match up to $100, and that can be used for any of their fun and fantasy games. Set up today using that code Toolshed at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-toolshed. All right, so we will go back and forth. We're not going to snake or anything like that. It's kind of pointless, the two of us. So, again, all prospect eligibility requirements are in place here. For this one, 50 innings pitch at the major league level, which I don't think anybody's close to exhausting their status. So I think we're good on eligibility here. But Chris will lead us off. Who you got?
This top tier is really tough to decipher where I want to rank people. I really struggled with the arms and like, all right, who do I put where? And ultimately, I still land on Grayson Rodriguez, number one. And it was an easy choice, but it does reflect my rankings. It's basically, there's like a tier one, and he's at the top of tier one. He is the only one in tier one pitching in the major leagues currently. And, it hasn't been all pretty. It hasn't been great by any means. And, maybe that's reason to not take him one. But the reason I'll take him one is because he's already in the major leagues working out these kinks. I think it is important to note that he was hurt most of last year and it's still probably working out his stuff. I still think he's coming back from his stuff, like trying to figure out, all this, because he used to have an arsenal with like 560 or better, like 60 grade pitches or better. Really haven't seen that, though we have seen the changeup and the slider both look pretty good. I mean, both those pitches are running 30%, whiff rates are higher. The four seems really what's killing him. Otherwise, it's been pretty good. And I honestly think there's been some bad luck on the four seam. I mean, the location's good up. He's averaging 96 on it. The movement profile is good. So in general, I just think that he's going to get it going and he'll be more than fine. So while the other guys in my top tier are either hurt or pitching in the minors, Grayson Rodriguez is already working out his kinks in the majors. And I really do think he's going to be good for a long time to come. So I still got Rodriguez one.
Yeah, no, he's still one for me too. And even with the struggle so far, I was looking at some stats earlier on Sunday when I was writing up my top 100 starting pitcher rankings for the week on FTN. I was looking, he still has like, I think it was like a 20 point something K minus walk rate. He's still right below a 30% K rate. So, this is still like he's still striking out batters at a good clip. Walk rate's kind of a little higher than he usually had. But yeah, I'm still very much in on G-Raw, and he still looks like he's getting stronger and stronger. So I think the results will start being there overall. After him, it's like you could put like a handful of guys at number two, and depending on whose rankings you look at, whether it's mine, Chris's, Chris Welsh, James Anderson, whoever it may be, you probably see different number twos. I'm going to go Ricky Tiedemann, even with the injury. It doesn't sound like it's major. Hopefully it doesn't turn into anything major. But I have been a proponent of Tiedemann at number two for a bit now, and I'm going to stick with it. If Painter was healthy, even though he is starting to throw again, so I could have gone Painter here, but still, I'm a little more worried about Painter than Tiedemann, to be honest with you. But Tiedemann has a plus fastball, plus slider, and it's all, you know, could be three plus pitches in the profile, or at least above average pitches. Pretty advanced feel, locates to all quadrants, can drop, you know, can locate all of his or both of his secondaries for strikes, or use them to get the swing and miss. Now, he was just a very, very polished, poised, just advanced, you know, pitcher when I saw him last year in August. Really attacked hitters, very confident on the mound. Like, he had like that bulldog mentality. I love that. So I will go Tiedemann at number two by a hair over this next guy who maybe Chris goes to at three.
This will be interesting. I mean, it's a coin flip here at this point. I mean, I know who's the more talented arm, but I also know who the healthy arm is currently. So that's why I'm going to take Eury Pérez, who was dominant on Sunday as we're recording this. I mean, just looked incredible. And I think you have to take into account like the tacky ball of in Double A. He's in the Southern League, but he threw six innings, two hits, one earned, two walks, nine Ks. He's got a 2.32 ERA on the season. See, my thing about the tacky ball is it helps everybody, but when you still stand out above the crowd while using it, then it obviously shows you're still elite. That's why Christian Mayna is, you know, I'm not worried about his performance because he's been head and shoulders like above everybody else in the Double A and Southern League, which is using the tacky ball. And yeah, I mean, we may see some regression from some of these guys when they move to Triple A, like the spin and the IVB. Like, yeah, I mean, is that likely to happen? Yes. But at the end of the day, I mean, what Eury Pérez has done has just been significantly better than most everybody else in the league. I mean, he's running a 35%, higher than 35% CSW rate. His whiff rate right now is 42.5%. Like, it's just everything you want to see in an arm. I mean, he's big, he's durable, he's like a workhorse, and he's got frontline stuff. And because of that, I say I trust the health. I don't trust the health of any pitcher, but knowing he's healthy, I'll hand you the guy at four who, you know, probably doesn't go here if we do this at the beginning of the season. But for me, like, I'd take Eury Pérez right now at three.
What pitching prospect's health can we trust at this point? Like, even guys that have been healthy, I'm like, I just don't trust anybody anymore.
Zero.
Especially this year. It's like ridiculous this year. Even last year with G-Rod last year, now Painter and Tiedemann this year. I'm like, Espino as well. Obviously, he kind of both years now. But yeah, it's just, I don't trust any pitching prospect's health. You know, all the tin staff supporters and, you know, are banging their drums very, very loudly right now. But yeah, I will go Andrew Painter here at four. And yeah, he probably could have gone number one. Probably, I guess if you, it was probably down between him and Gio at preseason. I bet you it was probably maybe a 60-40 split to Painter, if I had to venture a guess, preseason. Obviously, one of the best minor league seasons for a pitcher we've seen in recent memory last year. I mean, 22 starts, 103 innings, 1.56 ERA, 0.88 whip, 155 Ks to just 25 walks. So it was ridiculous season. Obviously, frontline guy. Like, there's no doubting the frontline stuff here. The stuff is absolutely elite, and was looking to get a rotation spot out of spring training at just 19 years old. Well, almost 20. Turned 20 in the middle of April, but that was just how good Andrew Painter was, obviously, until the elbow injury kind of popped up. And then it was like that week of silence where like nobody said anything about it. So we were all worried, but he's back to throwing again. So hopefully we see him in some capacity this year. I don't know. Maybe they just baby him and leave him in the minor leagues. Maybe they bring him in a bullpen role down the stretch. I don't know. We'll see how much they want to baby him, but it's frontline stuff. You could argue it's the highest upside of any pitching prospect in the minor leagues right now. And a guy that could be a top 10 fantasy arm, you know, with, you know, elite extension, elite fastball, you know, great secondaries. Love Andrew Painter. Hopefully the elbow can stay, you know, doesn't need Tommy John as of yet. So hopefully that stays that way. So I will take Painter here at four.
This is where it gets interesting. I think after these four, I'm not surprised that the top four were this in some particular order. But now you can go a lot of directions, and I'm not sure that, like, I have a pretty big tier here. Like, I've got tier one, those top four, and then this tier spans about five arms. And so I'm curious to how it falls. Actually, I have six arms. But I am, this is adjusting my ranks. This guy was third in the tier, but I'm moving him up to first in this tier. And I'm going with Tanner Bibee, which maybe feels high for some people, but I don't think people realize how good Tanner Bibee really is. Not only does he have elite command control, but his stuff is extremely good as well. He limits hard contact. He gets whiffs. He commands the pitches extremely well. His slider, changeup, excellent pitches. The four-seam locates it really well. And this, the four-seam took a step up this year too, like with velo, which is significant. Like he's up to 99 in some. I mean, he's averaging 95, but he's been up to 99, which is encouraging. Dude gets great carry with the fastball at the top of the zone. Good extension. With the command, I mean, it's just nuts. He's not walked a batter. I mean, we are talking about 11 innings of major league sample, but you know, look past that. And he's just been consistently good in the minors as well. Like just flown under the radar. Last year, he had a 2.17 ERA in 132 and two-thirds innings. And he struck out 167 batters, which that was before his stuff even ticked up. He only walked 27. Sub-1 whip. This year, he was dominant in AAA. And now we've seen him dominate in the major leagues. I just think Tanner Bibee is just going to be an arm that probably flies under the radar for a lot of his career, but it's just really, really good. And yeah, his first start was against the Rockies on the road. So whatever. But he went into Yankee Stadium in his last start and pitched extremely well. I love Tanner Bibee. I love watching him pitch. It to me, it's like watching like peak Shane Bieber. It's like this guy's just got stuff. When the stuff ticked up and he had the command, it's like, all right, he's putting it all together. And yeah, he's got more velo than Shane Bieber, that's for sure. And I just expect Tanner Bibee to be an extremely high floor, like SP2 type for the foreseeable future. And the profile's really, really safe, which is why I'm taking him here at five.
You almost just called him Tanner Bieber, didn't you?
Yeah, when I was thinking about Shane Bieber. And...
well, it's like their names are pretty close. So you just throw an R on Bibee and then just kind of rearrange the letters a little bit. You can get Bieber. So yeah, thankfully you took him. Like this was gonna make my decision really, really tough. So I'm glad you helped me out a little bit here. I will go his organization mate in Gavin Williams here at six, who I have as my number five pitching prospect right now. And a guy I think that's actually, you know, a little bit closer to the first tier than I think I feel he's a little bit closer to the first tier, probably a lot of other people do. He is absolutely dominated everywhere he's gone. Obviously, he's kind of a big pop-up prospect his last year at East Carolina. You know, obviously didn't have a lot of great success before the pandemic and didn't pitch much during the shortened 2020 season, but 2021, you know, blew up and became a first round pick where he went 20th, 19th overall. Where'd he go? 23rd overall. I knew it was somewhere in that range. And then he's just absolutely dominated in the minor leagues. Look at over 30 career minor league starts, 174 ERA, 0.91 whip, 180 Ks, and 139 and two thirds innings. This year, he's made five starts between AA and AAA, 0.73 ERA, 0.73 whip, 31 Ks to eight walks in 24 and two thirds. Big, big fastball. Maybe it's at least plus. You can maybe say double plus. It's kind of teetering on that border there. And he's got three really good secondaries. I like the curveball. I think that's easily a plus pitch. Slider and changeup both pretty solid as well. Doesn't quite have the command and control profile of a Tanner Bibee, but solid enough as well. I mean, he's probably around 50 for each. And given his stuff, like that is fine. Like he commands his stuff pretty well. Maybe he's above average. You could maybe say a tick above average on both. Kind of borders on 50-55 grade, but overall, and he's a workhorse too. Like you look at the frames, like 6'6", 240, you know, hasn't had really any, you know, injuries. I probably just jinxed him, but he's probably gonna have Tommy John tomorrow. But you know, looks like a guy that's gonna eat innings, right? Looks like a guy that could give you 180 plus innings year in, year out, with really good ratios and a ton of strikeouts. So I will go Williams here, and I probably would have taken him at five as well, but it's so close. This is like a big cluster of arms and a lot of fun arms too.
For sure. And this is a tier, like, it's probably too late to shop in this tier at this point, like, right, based on these guys coming up in dominating as they have. But this is a really fun tier that have been Rodgers. Like, this was the tier to invest in last year. And you got to find those guys this year. And we may talk about some towards the end of this episode. But my next guy, and this guy is bumping towards the top of tier two for me. And maybe he is my fifth ranked prospect or pitching prospect right now behind the top four in Bybee. And it's Bryce Miller, who's just insanely dominant in his first two starts in the majors. He just came off a dominant start against the Astros. I mean, the A's, we were like, okay, it's the A's. Like, he struck out 10, but he was dominant against the Astros as well. You know, he didn't have the strikeouts. He didn't have the whiffs, but overall, the results were there, and he did not allow a run. He struck out 5. There's a lot of encouraging things here. His fastball is one of the best in the game. As we talked about him on the last episode, we talked about the promotions, and I just genuinely believe that his fastball sets everything else up and has a way to take him to the next level. He only had 8 whiffs tonight against the Astros, and all of them were on the four seam. It's a bit surprising he didn't get any more on the other pitches, but still, I'll take it. Yeah, it was a 25% CSW, which wasn't encouraging, but this fastball, the ride it gets to the top of the zone with his velo, are pretty unique. The traits and the characteristics of his fastball are extremely good, and I think the slider and the cutter play pretty well off of it. It's pretty similar to another pitcher we're going to discuss, but Bryce Miller has more command, so because of that, I will take Bryce Miller here with the 7th pick.
Yeah, Bryce Miller has looked absolutely great. And, you know, it's about 8:45 Eastern time right now. So a bit before Fab runs, you know, usually most of them are at 10, some are at midnight, but he's going to go for a pretty freaking penny. Like, I put in bids of like 250 plus on Bryce Miller. I like him a lot. The stuff has been nasty. I know you and I talked about him even back in his Texas A&M days, you know, leading up to that draft, you know. And our, you know, we talk about FYPD and whatnot, and yeah, he's always been filthy. And just ignore the stats in Double A this year; just ignore him. Like, this is a very electric arm, and looks like he could be up to stay. Like, the stuff is very good. He's leapfrogged all the other arms in that system, including Emerson Hancock. For me here at 8, again, you're thankful you've made my last two picks a little bit easier, because I was having really hard choices between some of these arms. I'll go Taj Bradley, even though, ever since he got his two starts since being sent back down, have not been great, which probably gives the Rays a built-in excuse to keep him down a bit longer for, you know, service time reasons. But Taj Bradley looked really, really good in his three starts with Tampa Bay, you know, a handful of weeks ago. 3.52 ERA, but a 2.30 xERA, 38.3% strikeout rate, 3.3% walk rate, so 35% came on his walk. Was missing bats at a good amount with the curveball, changeup as well, mixing, you know, the four seamer and the cutter. It's a really, really good four pitch mix, and he's always come into it pretty well. You know, he's at least an above average command and control guy, and obviously it's Tampa Bay. You know, we can say poo poo, you know, them for not being able to keep their arms healthy, and that actually is a concern at this point. But they know how to develop prospects. You know, one of the top three pitching development organizations in all of baseball, and Bradley is just the latest example of that. But plus fastball, you know, cutter is above average at least. I think the curveball, which doesn't really get a lot of good grades, I think the curveball is better than people give it credit for. And the changeup is at least, you know, fringe average. So he's got a legit four pitch mix. And again, above average to plus command and control of that as well. So I am still very high on Bradley. Maybe he gets limited. You know, obviously the Rays, they tend to do that, but long term, I think you're looking at a very, very good, like, SP2 borderline frontline guy, but I'm not quite ready to put him up in that frontline territory. But he has all the makings of just being an impact arm for a long time.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Another arm in this tier for me. So there's a lot of arms to like right here. And I have two arms left in tier two for me, and I'm having trouble picking. And we will see which one I take. I am going to go Mason Miller. Mason Miller, much like Bryce Miller, has the big fastball. His stuff is really good. The command is a bit shaky. Like, you look at the walk rate, it's there. I mean, you watch him pitch, and it's almost as if it works though, because he almost like aims down the middle and wherever it goes, it goes, and it works for him. I think that Miller has the upside to be an SP1, but he probably never reaches that. I'm just concerned about how many innings he throws and, you know, what we actually get out of him. He does allow some hard contact. It's an interesting profile, but one that has, like, obviously an elite fastball. I mean, talking averaging 98.4. People want to comp it to Spencer Strider. I'm not sure I'm willing to go there. He doesn't get the whiffs on the fastball just because the location's inconsistent with it. But, I mean, based on Savant's, based on the velo and movement, it says Jacob deGrom, Spencer Strider, Hunter Green, Garrett Cole, and Michael Kopech. So, those are pretty good people to be comp to, I'd say.
Well, so. Maybe not Michael Kopech at this point, though he looked good today. But
yeah,
but yeah, that's, you know, Miller is a hard one to. We talked about him. I mean, he's a hard one to rank and value right now. Because obviously the stuff is elite, but the track record is very, very small. But yeah, can't go wrong with it getting a guy like Mason Miller here, who I have right as a, you know, borderline top 10 pitching prospect right now as well. I'm going to go to your boy here, Chris. I'm sorry. I was trying to leave him. I'm trying to set you up for this guy, but he's next in my rankings. So I got to go with my rankings here. Go Brandon Pfaadt.
Yeah.
Obviously, he didn't look great in his debut. He gave up 4 home runs. And, you know, that is a slight concern. And we want to hear your thoughts on this too, Chris. Like, last year, he's always kind of given up a lot of home runs, right? Like, the stuff is good. You know, fastball that doesn't have elite velocity. You know, it's a solid fastball. He's got the, you know, slider, changeup as well, both of which had a 40%, I know, one start, but both had a 40% whiff rate, and, you know, mixing a curveball as well. Obviously, plus control, but kind of the command seems to tend to be a little bit inconsistent, especially with that fastball. So that is the one concern I have for him moving forward. Obviously, if you don't have the elite velocity, you do well commanding it to all quadrants. And usually he has in that, he's shown that at times, but, you know, last, especially in that start and even earlier this year, yeah, he was in Reno and that's, you know, homer happy, obviously PCL as well. But that's like the one concern I have with him that I'd love to see some better command in general, especially with the fastball moving forward. But overall, you know, guy looks like, you know, a guy that can pitch, you know, 180 plus innings with good ratios, plenty of strikeouts. So he's proven that in the minor leagues. So he's a guy that could be one of those guys. So right now I have him as my number, where is he at my rankings here? He's my number 8 pitching prospect here. So, you know, falling a couple spots here to me at 10. But again, this is a massive cluster. I guess it's still tier 2 for me. It's a pretty sizable tier, though. I think we're getting near the end of it now. But Chris, are you concerned a little bit with Pfaadt's command?
Not long term. I'm not putting a lot of stock into that start. He's been a different pitcher, though, this year at least. I mean, watched him a lot last year and even this year, and he does look a bit different. And I have some slight reservations. I've never thought Brandon Pfaadt would be an ace. I always just felt like he'd be a more of a high floor type because of the amount of innings and the volume you can get out of him. Yeah. Goes deep into games. Like, the home runs were an issue and we chalked it up to the PCL, but we certainly saw it his first start. The command, as you mentioned, was off. I mean, he gave up home runs on pitches that he just left over the heart of the zone. One on the four seam, one on the slider, and 2 on the changeup. But in general, I think his secondaries looked good. His fastball was not there at all. But I think that it will be okay. The velo's up a little bit on it from last year. I'm not particularly worried. It just all depends on what your expectations were with Brandon Pfaadt. If you thought he was going to come and be an ace or a savior of your staff, then yeah, you probably should be a little worried, but I think he's a high floor arm. I think he'll be okay moving forward. So I think the command gets in check.
All right. Yeah. I'm not like really worried about it, but something I'm going to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah.
So that's the top 10 moving on to number 11.
All right. So this is a tougher choice. This is a range where, golly, just looking down my list, it's like there is a clear-cut guy in my rankings, but I almost feel the need to adjust that looking at it. And I'm not sure particularly who I want to go with, because just going down my list, it's like, OK, okay, this guy has some concerns. This guy, good stuff, but hasn't been good. Next guy's injured. Next guy, concerns. It's like, I kind of just want to jump someone way up, but I'm not sure if it's the right move. At the end of the day, I'll just follow my rankings, which probably change after this, and I'll take Gavin Stone. He is the next guy up in the rankings by 20 spots overall. I'm not sure I like that. As going back and, you know, watching Stone, like, I have reservations about the change up first, like, type profile. And we talked about this in our last episode too, like the Chris Paddock kind of effect, where when the changeup is your really only true secondary, he throws a slider, but not that often. I think there's some reasons to have some concerns about Gavin Stone. The fastball is fine. It's, you know, 93.3. It's similar velo to Fott. Doesn't get a lot of whiffs on it. Location's kind of spotty. But the changeup we know is a good pitch. Don't have any concerns about that pitch at all. But when that is your go-to pitch, I think that you can find yourself in a pickle really quick. I'd love to see him develop and throw the slider more, because I think the slider is a good pitch. The slider misses bats, but he's just going to have to throw it more often in order to be successful. In the day, I still like Stone, but I don't think Gavin Stone is in tier two for me, because even going back to, you only have to look at what he did just in the major league start, but also all year in AAA, the only pitch that generates a lot of whiffs is his changeup. I mean, his four seam had a 7.9% swinging strike rate in AAA. His slider had just a 7.6% swinging strike rate. That's not ideal either, especially considering he got barreled up on the slider. The location, not good. The changeup, however, 27.5% swinging strike rate, 37.5% CSW. That's a really good pitch, but I'm afraid, like, that's all he's got. So I am a bit concerned with Gavin Stone. I take him here at 11, but I highly consider jumping somebody up a good bit to take the spot.
I'm trying to figure out who that would be. I have a dude. No, I'm not gonna spoil it. It might be him. Or I know who it was. I think I know who it was.
We'll see.
Just answer me this: is it an American League pitching prospect?
No.
God damn, that's not okay. That was my backup was a National League guy. Okay, probably one of those two. Let's see if I'm right. This is tough, man. This is getting to a range where it gets really tough. Obviously, we've got the Dodger guys in here. Oh, the other Dodger guy is still here. Ah, dude, this is tough. I don't know. I'm screw it. I'll go Markievicz Tink Hence here. I don't know. This is somewhat high risk, high reward with Tink Hence. Obviously, we saw him out in the AFL last year, and velocity was kind of up and down. Well, he's shown pretty solid velocity at times. He's undersized, 6'1", 175, which might even be a bit big. I don't even know if he is 6'1", 175, but struck out a ton of batters last year in low A Palm Beach, 81 and just 52 in the third innings. Only gave up 8 runs. Like, he was dominant. Like, there's no doubt about it. He was dominant. Now, dealing with a bit of a chest issue, though it's just deemed minor, so he should be back, sooner rather than later. But there is some reliever risk here. But the stuff is just really, really good. I would love to see him just bulk up a little bit. And obviously, I don't think he's probably done growing. I don't think he's magically going to be 6'4 overnight. But I'd love to see him just add a little bit of bulk to that frame. You know, maybe even get another tick or two of velocity, or maybe be able to hold mid-90s as opposed to, it dipping later in starts, which is what we've seen with him at times. But the upside is, I'm not going to say front line, but the upside's a number two. I think the upside is that, but the kind of downside, like the risk is, again, in the bullpen. So a lot of kind of ways this could go with Tink Hence, but I'll bank on the upside here. I think he's still in that top 10, pitching prospect discussion at least, and where'd he go? So he went 12 in this, so I think that's fair.
Yeah, 100%. So I'll just go ahead and jump the guy up who...
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky?
In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I think you like a lot.
Think I like a lot. Oh no, don't. Is it a guy I saw live a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Darn. All right, go ahead and have him.
Mick Abel.
Damn you.
I watched this whole start two nights ago. He hit 98 in the sixth inning on his 85th pitch of the game. I was just highly impressed. And
yep.
The Arsenal as a whole is really good. It's really complimentary of all his pitches. And Mick Abel looks like, and I thought that this could be the breakout for him. And we've seen steady progress from his debut in 2021 to his jump from high A to double A. There was progress last year. And he really seems to have taken a step forward this year. I was especially impressed with his command for the most part. Yeah, sometimes it does get away from him. He's running a 20%+ K minus BB right now, which is encouraging. His whip is below one, which he's been last year he was a 1.35 whip guy, and the ERA is at 2.53. So watching Mick Abel, I was like, oh man, like this guy's really got it. He's not using the tacky ball, so that's obviously an encouraging thing, and he's getting those results. And I think he's got the results against some pretty good teams. I mean, there's a mixture of guys in double A, but overall, to see what he's done so far and to see just to watch that entire start, I was like, okay, I really believe that this is it. And we talked about him. Like, go back to our very first episode, I think it was. We talked about him. Maybe that wasn't that year, but we talked about that FYPD class. We really liked him. But I just love the confidence here. At the end of the sixth inning, he threw this beautiful slider. He didn't get the call. It was it was definitely a strike. And the ump just completely missed it. And so it's 3-2 count. He goes right back to it. And he gets a great just swing and miss on it. Overall, I just was impressed with the amount of whiffs he got, the amount of strikes that he threw. And those are all major steps up for Abel. So I think he's moving up boards and we'll move up past this, to be honest.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And seeing back-to-back starts of six innings and zero walks has been very encouraging. Like, I've said it for a while. And Chris, you were right. It was that the 2020 FYPDs that we were talking about him. So I remember we were calling him Mick Abel back then. Remember, I think it was like his aunt or uncle or something like that. That politely reached out to us like, hey, it's Abel. I'm like, oh, thank you. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that we talked about him in our though I can't remember if we did pitchers or hitters first. I remember like our first two episodes were the FYPD review. I forget which we went with first, but yeah. Episode one or two, we were talking about Mick Abel, and my love for him has not dwindled during the last, two and a half years, my word, 2.5 years now. Like, I've said it before. Like, I think he's got Mr. Strider on the brain. Steven Strasburg. Upside, and I think he does have frontline upside. Like, the command and control has been kind of like the red flag with him, and not even a major one, but something I want to see him improve. And it looks like he has, you know, he looked a lot better with his command, and he had a ton of whiffs. I forget how many it was, but 17, 18, 19, something like that in my live look. And that was in just, I think he went 4 2/3, if I recall correctly. He had like 10 whiffs in the first like two innings or something like that. The stuff is really good. So yeah, I like Mick Abel a lot here. Who I was going to go with next. So now I got to pivot, and this is tough between these two. Both National League West arms. mean, in my rankings, I do have this guy ahead. Yeah, I'll go Bobby Miller of the Dodgers. You know, he's, you know, coming back from an injury as well, and he made two starts this year in AAA and haven't really looked good. But when he got to AAA last year, he had 28-6 strikeout to walk ratio and 21 on third innings. Obviously, you know, big fastball, big slider. You know, obviously the Dodgers have been, again, one of the top pitching development orgs in baseball, so you got to feel good about that. You know, you could say it's double plus fastball and slider. Like, you could say that. Pretty solid changeup as well. I think the changeup is at least above average. You know, flashes plus at times. And he doesn't have the, you know, greatest command and control, but it's at least, you know, it's at least average command and control. Maybe see him second half of the year, but I think he's a really, he's a high-end SP3, maybe like a back-end SP2, kind of in that territory. I definitely think SP2 is possible. Even though he's had, you know, some injuries he's dealt with, he looks like he has like that workhorse frame, 6'5", 220, 225 or so. So a lot to like with Bobby Miller. So I think he's right in this range where he's still like, you know, borderline top 10 or so pitching prospect. And I'll take him here at 14.
Yeah, with Miller, I think he's definitely underperformed. The stuff is much better than the results that you've seen so far on the field, and he'll be fine. So I'm not particularly worried. I think that Miller has really, really good stuff. There's a lot of Miller's pitching prospects that are just, I mean, we've now had the third Miller taken in 14 picks, which is pretty crazy.
Over 20% have been the last name Miller. Do we have any other Millers? I'm just kind of scrolling my rankings. There's no more Millers, right? At least none that we'll talk about here.
I don't think so.
No, no more Millers. Okay, we're done.
All right. So with the 15th pick, I'm going to Kyle Harrison. He's fallen a bit. I think the command has caught up to him some. And I've said this where I believe that he really got away with poor command because the stuff was so good at lower levels. And now we're seeing him at AAA and the results haven't been there. The results have been better, but the walks are all over the place. I will say his last start was encouraging. He pitched on Saturday and he did not walk a batter in four innings. He faced the minimum, just faced, you know, 12 batters, struck out 7 of them. So that's obviously encouraging, but every start before that, or I say every start, in 5 of his previous 6 starts, he had walked at least 3, and in 4 of those, he walked 4. He still walked 21 batters so far in 19 and two-thirds innings, which is far from encouraging. But I will say the fact that he has a 3.2 ERA right now, considering the walks, is pretty impressive. I do think it's important to acknowledge that there's some serious command risk here, and there's some serious reliever risk. The stuff's good. The fastball plays up significantly. The slider is really good as well. And those pitches can carry him, but he's going to have better command at the end of the day in order to be a successful starter. I do believe that the Giants have every intention of developing Kyle Harrison as a starter, but acknowledge there's risk for sure. Eno's Stuff Plus model really likes him. He's doing Stuff Plus for AAA, and he's one of the better arms, grades out in AAA, so that's encouraging. For what it's worth, Bobby Miller's second behind Mason Miller and stuff, so like I said, I think Miller has significantly underperformed his stuff, but yeah, Harrison's fallen, but he's still worth the spot here, in my opinion.
No, absolutely. That's like, obviously, people kind of figured it out. That's who I was debating between him and Bobby Miller there, my last pick. So, yeah, definitely. He's still a top, you know, 15 pitching prospect, still top 100 overall for sure. But, yeah, that's something I saw last year in the live look as well, where the command just wasn't quite there. So I comped him to Robbie Ray, and I still feel pretty good about that comp. Ooh, this is a tough one, though. I mean, this might be a little high, given that he's not even due back until 2024, but I still have Max Meyer like right around 100 overall, and he's next in my rankings. I think now is a great time to buy low on Max Meyer. Like, he is a very, very good pitching prospect. Like, the stuff is filthy. It was plus to double plus fastball, double plus slider, and an above average changeup as well, with solid enough command and control over all of his pitches. You know, he was looking like he was going to debut, you know, last year, and obviously had the injury And now he had Tommy John, and I think it was in August, if I recall correctly. So yeah, we probably don't see him. If we do, it's very, very briefly, but I'm sure they just shut him down, or not shut him down, but don't have him pitch at all this year and then come back raring to go in spring training 2024. Maybe we see him mid 2024, something like that. So he'll be a little bit older at that point in time, but the stuff is really, really good. I think the upside's like a number two starter. Again, with the three really good pitch, especially the fastball slider, which, you know, might be, you know, you could argue that's one of the best, you know, two pitch combinations in all of minor leagues right now. So obviously a little bit of risk, but hey, we're in that section where there's like, you know, the risk is coming up, you know, with, you know, even with the guys like Mason Miller, there's some risk. Obviously Bobby Miller, Tink Hens, Kyle Harrison, kind of in that range. So I don't feel too bad about taking Max Meyer here.
No, I mean, I think that's a fairly wise pick considering like he'll be back semi-soon. I say semi-soon, but he's already had the surgery out of the way, which is nice. And
right,
we've seen him excel in the past. So I have no reason to believe that he won't come back and be a solid arm. So solid pick here. I think this is where we're getting in a really interesting range. And for proximity purposes here, and because I think I can get the other guy like coming back, I'm going to go with Matthew Liberatore here. It's definitely a major step up from where he was coming into the offseason. Props to Baseball America for staying in on him. They had him top 100 all offseason. I did not, but when he came into the spring and his velo was up, the velo on everything was up, that was like, okay, like this guy is legit. Why he's not pitching in the major leagues right now is beyond me. The Cardinals' incompetence right now is just pretty crazy. I mean, what is going on there? I'm not sure Ollie Marmol makes it past June at this rate. Like, they need to duct tape his mouth at press conferences. Just
and the team's just not what's their win loss record right now? They are, I don't know, last time I checked, it was like 7-7. They are 11-24.
Yeah.
For a team with that much talent to be 11-24 is just they're the worst team in the National League by a good amount. They have a 314 win percentage. Next lowest is the Rockies at 400. So they are what's that? They're three games worse than any other team in the National League right now.
That's wild. But Liberatore's dominated. He's been a bright spot. He would be a bright spot on this team. I mean, his AAA numbers are extremely good. As I mentioned, he's running a 32% K rate, 22.5% K minus BB, 32% CSW. Everything you want to see, as I mentioned, his velo's up. His fastball is sitting around 95 now. It was like 93 previously. That's awesome. He's getting whiffs on it, getting called strikes at the top of the zone. His curveball is electric. I say it's electric, but it's a great pitch to watch. I mean, the 12-6 action there. The curveball has a 38% CSW right now and a 20% swinging strike rate. Phenomenal pitch there. The sinker, everything. The velo's up, and he's throwing a pretty true four-pitch mix, and he's throwing the changeup is his fifth pitch about 5% of the time so far. The proximity is what does it for me here, and because I think he's ticked up so much on top of the proximity, the pick is Liberatore.
I'm going to go to a pretty similar pick here, a lefty pitching in AAA. I'll go Andrew Abbott here at pick, what are we at, 18 or something like that. Abbott is just striking out everybody and anybody. 51 strikeouts this year in just 25 and two-thirds innings. You know, ERA under a buck and a half. You know, two starts in AAA. He's been, you know, hasn't been quite as good as AA, but it's hard to beat 36 strikeouts in 15 and two-thirds innings with like a 60-whatever% K rate that was. But 15 Ks and two starts, only giving up two runs, five walks. He's kind of, he didn't come out of nowhere, but last year, you know, he had a mid-4 ERA, you know, between high A and AA. So he was not very high up many rankings, but, and the stuff doesn't really grade out super impressively, but I think the slider's plus. I think the fastball is above average. You know, he's pretty solid. You know, I think he's above average command and control as well. We'll see. You know, the changeup is the one that kind of lags behind. Obviously, the fastball slider is the dominant pairing in his arsenal. We'll see where the changeup ends up. If that can be just like a fringe average, just to help him offset, you know, use that against right-handed batters, I think that'll be good enough to let the fastball and slider really flourish. And we've seen that this year. Changeup looked okay this year, though he hasn't really thrown it too much, but obviously relying on that fastball slider. And, you know, when you're getting results like he is, why not? So, you know, after Lodolo and Green and Ashcraft, I mean, they're rolling out, I think, what, Luis Sessa and who's the, I don't even know who the fifth guy is in the rotation right now, but I think you can see him break in fairly quickly. Probably, I think he may even be up by Memorial Day, but I think by the end of June at the latest, we see Andrew Abbott up, and he's probably a mid-rotation arm, but one that can get you a good amount of strikeouts as well. Hopefully, you can just keep the ball in the park, in the Great American Ballpark, but I think with his bat-missing ability, he'll be okay there. So maybe he got there's a little bit of a higher, you know, maybe not super low ratios. We've seen even Lodolo and Green have their issues with that ballpark, but good strikeout stuff, you know, pretty advanced arm, so I think Abbott fits well here at pick 18.
I'm going with, say, a pop-up, but a riser. I mean, he's far from a pop-up considering where he was drafted.
I don't think you're going with him. Okay, never mind. I thought you were still my guy.
Cade Horton is who I'm going with. He's been stellar this year. I mean, he's looked just every bit of what the Cubs thought he could be when he drafted him, and what every bit of what he was in the College World Series last year. I mean, we're talking about a prospect who played football as well, and he played shortstop before fully becoming a pitcher after coming back from Tommy John surgery this year. Once he got healthy, he was so good in the College World Series. And the Cubs were like, all right, we believe we can develop this guy. Excellent fastball slider combo. I mean, he already got promoted, which is encouraging to see. He's bumped to high A. So sadly, I was hoping to see him. He was down here in Myrtle Beach, but that won't be the case. I think they were coming to Columbia, which is a little closer to me. I was hoping to see him, but he's just been dominant. I mean, running a 40.7% CSW, anything above 30 is really good. And I know we're talking about a college arm that's in low A, but we're talking about a college arm that threw very few innings in college because of the injuries and the fact that he played shortstop. So Cade Horton is moving up rather quickly, and I think he's worth a spot in this top 20 of pitching prospects at this point based on his performance and the arsenal.
The Cubs are building something, man. I mean,
they are.
Good young talent there. Some pitching prospects, obviously, added Wisniewski to the mix this year. And, you know, Horton should maybe be up. You think Horton's up later this year, or do you think we see him more 2024?
No, I think he's going to spend all year in the minors.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that too, but probably up first half of 2024. I'm actually going to go, again, kind of keep the Cubs thing rolling, who I thought you might have gone with this guy. I'm going with another guy that, again, not a pop-up. Well, kind of can fit the pop-up mold, but guy that's risen up rankings a ton, who I just put top 100 overall. We talked about him recently, but I'm going Ben Brown, another Cubs arm here. I'm developing a serious man crush on Ben Brown. Like, the stuff is really, really good. Fastball, slider, curveball, all above average to plus. Yeah, at least average command and control, maybe a tick above average. Maybe you could say above average command and control. And he's just been dominant this year. He had four starts at Double A Tennessee, then got bumped up to Triple A Iowa recently and pitched very well in that start as well. 5 2/3, only one earned run, two walks, and seven strikeouts on the year. K rate right above 37%, walk rate a tick above 8%. He's just been really, really hard to hit. You know, he's 6'6". He's got that nice downhill plane on the fastball and commands it pretty well. And so this is a really good three-pitch mix. And I think he's going to be – like, I think there's SP2 upside here, or at least a really good SP3. Again, there's a lot of fun, you know, him and Cade Horton coming up with Wisniewski, who I think we both like a decent amount as well. A lot of fun arms in this Cup system. And I think Ben Brown, you probably see him debut later on this year. Cubs are right at 500 right now, but that's right in the mix of the wild card right now, because outside of – your Atlanta Braves, Chris, who I just realized have a 7-game lead already in the National League East. Wow. Because the rest of the division is crapping their pants right now. Well, by that, I mean the Mets. And then Pittsburgh's at 20-15. And then everyone else is like pretty much right near close to 500. So the Cubs, I think, could stay right in that wild card mix and maybe bring up Ben Brown later this season. So I think he's armed. You can still get for a fairly reasonable cost compared to probably what it should be. Both these guys, I think, are great, great targets right now.
Agreed. Want to keep going?
Yeah, let's. What are we at for time here? We're at 51. Yeah, let's go like, what, three more each?
Yeah, that works for me.
All right.
All right, so that was the top 20, right?
Yes.
You were the 20th pick there with Ben Brown. I'm going to go with Logan T. Allen, who it's not been taken yet. He's up. He's pitched very well with the Guardians. They just develop arms. And he's another one that, you know, we saw him this spring. I was like, okay, like the stuff looks improved. He now has 3 starts under his belt in the majors. And he has a 2.70 ERA, has 19 strikeouts and 16 and two-thirds innings, which is encouraging. He 27% strikeout rate's fine, but I do like the stuff a little bit more than that, honestly. I think he's going to tick up. His changeup's elite. His sweeper's really good. I think the four-seam's pretty good, too, despite the low velo. He can make it work. So I think Logan T. Allen, that is going to be a staple in the Cleveland rotation for the foreseeable future and just a dude you want on your teams.
Remember when Logan S. Allen was supposed to be a Cleveland rotation arm? That didn't work out so well, but yeah. This Logan Allen, much, much better than the other Logan Allen. Oh, man, I'm deciding between a few different arms here, but I'm going to go with a guy that I think is just still really undervalued. And I think you're going to agree with this. I'm going Owen White from the Texas Rangers. I put out a poll about a week and a half ago saying, you know, basically who would you want out of these 4 Texas pitching prospects? Obviously it was him, Porter, Rocker, and Leiter. I think White finished like 3rd in that poll. And I think I easily have him I think Porter's near there and then Kumar Rocker's coming up, but I had him first among Texas pitching prospects by a fairly decent margin here. And yeah, the K rate's down this year. He's only had 23 Ks in 27 and two-thirds innings, but you know it's pretty solid stuff. I think he screams just like really good number 3 starter to me. He's got a 4-pitch mix, all average to plus pitches. I think probably the slider is probably his best pitch, but above-average fastball as well. But an above-average, you know, to plus command and control as well. And yeah, I'm not worried at all about the K rate ticking down. He still has a 2.93 ERA. This year in 6 starts for Double-A Frisco, had a 2.49 ERA last year in 4 starts with 23 Ks, just 4 walks in 21 and two-thirds innings. Really just keeps getting better and better. You know, really got better once he went up to Double-A last year, even though he took out a ton of batters down in High-A Hickory. So I think, again, it's a really good number 3 starter. I think he'd be, you know, right around a K per inning type of guy, like a 25, 26% K rate, something like that. And a guy that can keep his ratios in check too. So I think he's still pretty underrated and a great dynasty target as well.
I agree. I think he's comfortably first among the Rangers pitching prospects. Yeah. Owen White, that is. I'm going to take Louis Varland. He's moved up a ton for me. His stuff is just pretty exceptional, and I think that it's still being underrated how good his stuff truly is and how much it's really ticked up. I mean, among AAA guys, like he was right there with like Tanner Bibee and Grayson Rodriguez for stuff. And his individual pitch mix grades out really, really well according to Eno's model on Fangraphs. Like once he's been up and he's now pitched in the major leagues, it's like while the results haven't quite been there, the stuff certainly has. And I just truly believe in this and think that Louis Varland is someone that should stay in this Twins rotation and be a staple in it. And I just think he's much better than he's shown on the mound. The results have suggested. I mean, when we're looking at stuff among the twin starters, while, yeah, I mean, it's only been, you know, a couple starts for them, he's graded out extremely well overall. And you know, his slider grades extremely well, fastball grades well. Overall, it's like, all right, I think that he can be a dude. Like, similarities to Joe Ryan. Like I like Louis Varland a lot and think that he's just a bit undervalued. And I think he's a borderline top 100 guy and worth a pick here.
Yeah, Varland definitely has impressed and I underranked him last time. He's definitely a big riser right now. Now I'll put a little caveat. If health running, I would have probably gone like a Jackson Job here, but when I hear lumbar spine inflammation, I don't like the sounds of that. In fact, it's going to cost him, you know, 3 to 6 months. This was back in the middle of March. So he could miss the entire season, but lumbar spine, I know it's just inflammation, but back, spine, it always really concerns me. But so I will not be going with Jackson Job here. But am I going to go with, I think he this guy still belongs in the top 25 for pitching prospects, even though has the most risk we've talked about so far. It's probably not too much of a surprise what the name I'm going to say. I'm going to go Daniel Espino. Just talk about not going with one guy that's injured, going with another guy. But going into the season, Espino was a top five pitching prospect. And yes, he's going to be out the entire season and maybe even a little bit of next season as well. We might not see him until May, June next year. Hard, really hard to say at this point in time. But I'm still, obviously, the stuff with Espino is elite. You know, the fastball, two different breakers, changeup, they've all flash plus at times. It was really improving, you know, his strike throwing ability, commanding all four of his pitches, you know, repeating his mechanics because he has like that drop and drive more than most pitching prospects. Very athletic delivery, but he was making it work. And Cleveland was really like, when Cleveland gets, obviously they make, you know, the best out of every, most basically every pitching prospect situation. But when you have a guy with that much talent in that Cleveland org, that was really exciting. But yeah, it's a bummer that he's gonna miss the next year or so. But if you can buy low on him, I would, because the upside is still tremendous. He's only 22 years old right now, so you can still see him debut before the age of 24 or so, or right around there, as he's 22 in a few months. So won't be 23 until I think the next winter. So still very high in Espino. So if you can buy low, I would. I think he's still like a top 150 or so overall prospect.
I agree. So I guess this is my last pick. We're going three more. This is 25th overall, I think. And
I know who you're going here.
All right, take a guess.
Christian Mana.
It's going Christian Mana. Yes. I sure was. I don't know how you got that, but
well, I was thinking, I'm like, there's no way we get through 26 and you don't take Christian Mana. I know, and I'm very high in Mana too. I moved him way up. I know you've been really, you know, talking a lot about Mana on Twitter and on your Discord as well.
Yeah, and it's just the upside's too good not to take here. And again, grain of salt, he's throwing in the Southern League, which has the tacky ball, but he's still running a CSW that's 8% above the rest of the league average. And his whiff rate's 10% above league average. I just have a hard time not buying into what he's doing. I mean, the fastball velo is ticked up hair. He's still like 93, but I mean, doggone, it works. And, you know, while he is running a 3.96 ERA, that's like probably people are like, okay, he's not that great. His FIP is 3.10, and the whip is solid at 108. He's got a 40.8% strikeout rate to just a 5.8% walk. It's a 35% K minus BB rate, a 20% swinging strike rate, as I mentioned, a 40% whiff rate. The numbers are just hard to ignore at this point. And I think that he's every bit legit. He's not been wowing from like a ERA standpoint, but outside of his first start, every one of his starts has been two earned runs or less. And he was three earned runs in his first start in over four innings. His last two starts, he's gone over 10 Ks in each of those. I just think Mana is it, and he's somebody that I want everywhere at this point.
Yeah, no, Mana is right in this range for me as well. So, yeah, I had a feeling, and I was debating, if you didn't go with him, I was debating going with him here to round out the show with Mr. Irrelevant. I'm debating between two that are completely different arms, different leagues. You know, one's, you know, closer to being ready. The other one's not going to be ready for a few years. I'll go. The other one was okay. So I'm going to not go with Emmett Sheehan. That's when I was debating here. I'll go Dylan Lesko. You know, he's right in this range in my rankings. These two are actually back to back in my rankings. Obviously, Lesko has not pitched yet, working his way back from injury. Should debut at some point this season, but the stuff is really, really good with Dylan Lesko, like frontline stuff. You know, one of the best changeups in the minor leagues. Even I know he hasn't pitched technically in the minor leagues yet, but when he does, the changeup will be one of the best in all of the minor leagues. Big fastball as well. Curveball is flash above average. I think the, you know, developing the curveball a bit, a little bit more consistency with that, is it's showing good shape to it. Just inconsistently, you know, it's a little better feel for spinning a breaking ball. But if he does, like, this could be a frontline type of guy. And that's why the Padres took him 15th overall last year and gave him nearly $4 million, even though he was hurt at the time. So, and pretty, you know, for his age, you know, he was a pretty advanced, you know, prep arm, you know, with, in terms of command and control, pitchability, feel, very advanced for his age. That gives you, you know, makes you feel better about him coming back and just, you know, realizing his potential in the Padres org. So I will go Dylan Lesko to round out the show. Anybody that you're surprised didn't go, or anybody you kind of wanted to fit in if we won a few more?
Brock Porter's right in that range.
Yeah.
Like, he could certainly go.
DL Hall, you get DL Hall, he's such a wide range. DL Hall, maybe. A guy I won, if we did a couple more, I probably would have squeezed Joey Cantillo in there as well. He's really flying up my rankings, too. Nick Frasso, too, another one. Maybe I almost thought you were going to take your boy AJ Smith-Shawver as well.
Yeah, he's the one I was going to mention. I mean, he's up to 121 overall for me, so he's right in this range of arms, honestly. So, yeah, he's there. Like, him and Mayna are similar. Just like, gosh, I love Mayna. So, I love AJ Smith-Shawver too. So, yeah, there's several arms that are worth talking about. Ty Madden's moved up a lot for me.
Yep.
Like what I've seen from him. There's several arms. And I hate to say another Braves name, but Owen Murphy's looked good so far.
He has, yeah.
So there's a lot of fun. This is why I end the show like this. I don't think you should ever target the high-end pitching prospects, because guys pop up every year that you can use. And I honestly just use them to trade them. Like, they're going to rise up. I mean, like, at one point you could have picked Ricky Tiedemann up off waiver wires, Yuri Perez off waiver wire. I mean, Painter was a FYPD darling, but he wasn't like he was like a top 30 guy.
Right.
So don't invest in the high end arms. Just pick them up. I mean, Mason Miller, you could have picked up this year in Dynasty, probably. Brandon Pfaadt, you could have picked up last year. Gavin Stone, you could have picked up last year. Teen Kintz could have picked up last year. All these guys you could have picked up. And so next year, this time, we're going to be talking about a ton of pop-up guys you could have picked up off the waiver wire. Don't go trade for top pitching prospects. Just be active on the waiver wire. That's my suggestion.
Absolutely, because you'll have to pay a pretty penny for the top guys, and you can get a lot of these names for cheap or even free, depending on your league depth. And yes, look at Detroit, for instance. Like, you know, if we did this, you know, in the offseason, we would have taken, you know, guys like Wilmer Flores or even Reese Olson over Ty Madden. And now it's going to, you know, you see how things can flip flop so quickly, and some stuff we don't see in the offseason that goes on, you know, changes the pitch mixes, you know, adding bulk, whatever it may be, all the work that goes in. So values can change very quickly. Guys can rise and fall very quickly. And that's why it's important to be on top of that, like Chris said. So, but that will wrap up this episode. We'll come back on Wednesday with the Dynasty version of that. We'll see how many, if any of these guys sneak into that episode, which will probably be roughly the same number of picks. But that will wrap us up for this episode. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to check out both of our platforms, my Patreon, Chris's Substack, for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.